So what I'd like for us to do is go through the key book for the year, not through the whole book, only Carol can do that, but through a certain portion of the book of Galatians, and then I would like also to read to you an analysis by Luther on that particular portion. And see if, as you listen to it, you can respond with any kind of image, any kind of visual picture sensation. Now, of course, this would be easy if we were reading something from Sermon on the Mount, the wedding at Cana, all of a sudden big jugs of wine, big jugs of water, water, and that's the visual apparatus just goes easy. All of a sudden our mind flashes back to Sunday school pictures, you know, and that's what we get. Jesus walking around 6 inches off the ground like a bearded lady with a silver plate behind his head and doing all those neat things. So the visual imagery is there. Actually, maybe we ought to get rid of some of our visual imagery and replace it with others. But when we start getting into epistles, into ideas rather than stories, I think for a lot of us, using the sensation of visual imagery stops. And I would just like to see whether it might be possible for us to share what pictures come in our mind's eye with one another. You'll be doing this, I won't. I'll just do some reading. I brought an example. And unfortunately, the example is not an epistle, it's a gospel. But it's a gospel which I just finished, and which is the Gospel of Mark. And all it is the words of the Gospel of Mark with color image over the top of it. Paul, could you help?
Sure.
Now this might be one description. Why don't you get in the middle on this side,
all right,
and you move backwards that way.
Oh, my Lord.
And I'll move backwards
great
this way.
Balls of fire.
Oh. Now that's the entire Gospel of Mark. Word by word. If you were old and blind, you could come up and read it with your fingertips because the words are dimensional. They're all put in relief.
How did you do that?
Very carefully. We'll go at that some later. that isn't part of the Bible discussion. But The Gospel of Mark is the first gospel narrative. That's the first gospel that was written, all right? And the first gospel narrative out of the Gospel of Mark is the Passion story, which is down there by Paul, down at the bottom, that little area. And then he adds all the rest of it to the front. He just starts sticking stuff up until he goes back as far as he can, until he gets to the baptism of Christ. Mark does not begin with the birth as Luke does, or with the genealogy of Christ as Matthew, but he begins with the baptism, so we've got water at the beginning here. But the rest of it is sort of maybe like a landscape, Christ doing his business on the earth, and then things begin to get glorified. They begin to disintegrate. The landscape takes on a different kind of character until the passion, the death, and the resurrection. Okay? Now all of this, we're only talking about color, shape, line, a word next to a color. It's very abstract. It's not here's a man on one side, here's a blind person on another, see the man spit in the dirt, see the man pick up the mud, see the man put the mud on. It's not that. It's just simply color flow, maybe some shape, that sort of thing. Okay? All suggested by the text that is printed underneath the color image. Now, let me give you some color image. Paul, let's just roll this thing up. It's been a good year. Yeah, I haven't done anything like that before either. This is not what I would customarily do. So if this kind of thinking, thanks much, Paul. If this kind of thinking is not what you would customarily do, we're in common company. All right, now listen. For me, for you people that know about the experience of coming into the village center at the wrong time, for me, listening is very important, usually with sounds around. And it might be good maybe to even hear Galatians with some background. That's an interesting question. What kind of music would you play to these words? Some background, that'd be kind of interesting. You might be thinking of that. You might want to close your eyes. You might not. We'll just read one little section. In fact, why don't I have someone else who has a Bible read from Galatians chapter 3, verse 23 to chapter 4, verse 11. Chapter 3, verse 23 to chapter 4. Verse 11. Who has that and would be?
I've got it, Rich.
Okay, please.
Now before faith came, we were confined under the law, kept under restraint until faith should be revealed, so that the law was our custodian until Christ came, that we might be justified by faith. But now that faith has come, we are no longer under a custodian. For in Christ Jesus you are all sons of God through faith. For as many of you were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you are Christ's, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to promise. I mean that the heir, as long as he is a child, is no better than a slave, though he is the owner of all the estate. But he is under guardians and trustees until the date set by the Father. So with us. When we were children, we were slaves to the elemental spirits of the universe. But when the time had fully come, God sent forth his Son, born of woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. And because you are sons, God has sent the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So through God you are no longer a slave but a son, and if a son, then an heir. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were in bondage to beings that by nature are no gods. Got the page. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn your back again to the weak and beggarly elemental spirits whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years. I am afraid I have labored over you in vain.
Thank you, Mark. Any imagery so far? That's hard language to try and pull symbols out of. Maybe some of our first symbols might be the traditional ones that the Ladies' Aid or the Altar Guild embroiders on pastors' stoles. Little flames for the Holy Spirit, the bird, the law, two tablets, anything else? Visual come to your mind at all?
A chain.
Pardon?
A chain.
A chain. A chain. What does the chain do? Is it in a pile?
It's stretched out, and behind it there's yellow light.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Okay. a chain, behind the chain, yellow light. Now before faith came, we were confined under the law, kept under restraint, until faith should be revealed. That's nice. I can see that. Yeah. Anything else? How do you visualize this one passage? Where is it now? About putting on Christ. Yeah. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. Do you visualize that as a coat of many colors? Or what does that look like to you? Anybody? How can he say a thing like that without some image coming into your mind? You have been baptized into Christ, which means you have put on Christ. What does that look like?
I see kind of this vague cloud coming down over me and then forming exactly over me and then also penetrating and coming inside of me.
Do you look different?
I don't see myself looking different, but I see God the Father seeing me different.
Oh.
Now that's not taking that, that's understanding something else.
Okay, that'd be hard to paint. Yeah, okay. All right, a cloud, a putting on. Any other image?
I see, Rich, I see more of walking through a waterfall, and then on the other side of the waterfall the whole world is green and plush and lots of vegetation and good things growing to eat, and you know the whole image is completely changed just by passing through this waterfall.
Do you see that image as the waterfall as death or baptism?
Baptism.
So that new world then is here?
Yeah, and taking on, and rather than wearing something or an abrupt change in me myself, it's more of a change of things around me, and wearing Christ is an appreciation of all that that's there.
Okay. Okay. I'm painting little pictures in my mind. I should wait.
Rich, you should use this to your advantage.
No, well.
Change the ceiling.
Quick run home before I forget all these neat ideas. I hope this is on tape. Okay. Any more images? Feed me. You know, I'll give you some of mine if you want to make pictures. Any other images? Okay. What? Well, here.
I see. A pool of water, and it's crystal, and it's, you can see through it, and a man being baptized, and he's partially, you know, standing up and partially in the water, and imprinted on the water, like on the top of the water, is like Christ, and it's kind of a iridescent type. It's not a real, you know, it's sort of a translucent too, and as the person goes down and is baptized, he goes inside of Christ. And you can see that he's partially coming inside of Christ, like being put on.
Sounds like dying Easter egg. No, doesn't it? No, that oil that forms that neat stuff on the top, and you dip that egg down, and when it comes up, it's got this neat coat around it.
Yeah, and Christ is, I think he's crucified. You know, he's laying stretched out.
Hey, okay. Now, that was a symbol that I... I got right off the bat, and I guess I was waiting for that for me, the cross and all this. Anybody else get a cross?
No, I was seeing the stigmata.
Oh, the wounds. Yeah, the wounds of Christ. Remember the other big baptism thing of Paul's. We were buried with Christ by baptism unto death, like as we were raised again to the glory of the Father. Even so, we also should walk in newness of life. That, it would seem, would be like, in some ways, like Dale, life would look new, but the life we lead would be new also. And in fact, I guess for me, the putting on of Christ means that we look different. I think that's what, you know, how many of you have heard, why bother with Christians? You can't tell them from any other, you know, from any other folks. Who needs Christians if you can't tell the difference between the way they look and others, the way they act and other people? I guess that makes me real antsy, because in many ways I think a visual look of a Christian, really, I guess I want to see something different. Okay, any other images before we hit Luther and see if he helps us with some? Yeah.
The one part about the Juno of Greece, you know, that part.
Oh, no male, no female. Lufta.
I thought of a nail penetrating a black and white surface, and, you know, half black, half white, or whatever, two shades, and then around the nail kind of a shattered, not a gray area, but a black and white shattered area. Kind of.
Mm.
So we don't lose the individuality, and yet you still have, you know, the no division thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And the nail again, are you thinking crucifixion?
Yeah, that was
the
first thing I
thought. Yeah. Okay.
How about elemental spirits?
Also hard to paint. Elemental spirits. Boy, does Luther have something to say about elemental spirits. I was thinking of the world, the devil, our flesh, and Luther says it's the law. Luther is so mad at the law that he gets some images that
might not even be there.
No, yeah, for sure. Okay. You listen to this. Try and find some, make your own background music for this, and see if some images come. After the fullness of time was come, God sent his Son, made or born of a woman, and made under the law, that he might redeem them which were under the law. That is to say, after the time of the law was fulfilled, and that Christ was revealed, and had delivered us from the law, and that the promise was published among all nations. Luther gets very, very specific about how Christ does not come to bring a new law, but to set us free from the law that we were under before he came. He does not come with a law. Christ does not come as judge. Mark diligently how Paul here defineth Christ. Christ is the Son of God and of a woman, which for us sinners was made under the law to redeem us that were under the law. In these words he comprehendeth both the person of Christ and the office of Christ. His person consisteth of his divine and human nature. This he showeth plainly when he saith, God sent his own Son, born of a woman. Christ, therefore, is very God and very man. What does that look like? His office he setteth forth in these words, being made under the law, to redeem them which were under the law. And it seemeth that Paul here, as it were in reproach, calleth the virgin the mother of the Son of God, but only a woman, which thing was not well taken even of some of the ancient fathers, who would that he should rather have called her a virgin than a woman. But Paul entreateth in this epistle of the most high and principal matter of all, to wit, of the gospel, of faith, of Christian righteousness. Also, what manner of person Christ is, what is his office, what he hath taken upon him and done for our cause, and what benefits he hath brought to us wretched sinners. Wherefore, the excellency of so high and so wonderful a matter was the cause that he had no regard to her virginity. It was enough for him to set forth and preach the inestimable mercy of God, which would that his son should be born of that sex. Okay. Furthermore, this place also witnesseth that Christ, when the time of the law was accomplished, did abolish the same, and so brought liberty to those that were oppressed therewith, but made no new law after or beside that old law of Moses. Wherefore the monks, here comes the commercial. Wherefore the monks and popish schoolmen do no less err and blaspheme Christ, in that they imagine that he hath given a new law besides the law of Moses, than do the Turks, which vaunt of their Mohammed as a new lawgiver after Christ, and better than Christ. Christ then came not to abolish the old law, that he might make a new. But, as Paul here saith, he was sent of his Father into the world to redeem those which were kept in thraldom under the law. Those words paint out Christ lively and truly. They do not attribute unto him the office to make any new law, but to redeem them which were under the law. And Christ himself saith, I judge no man. And in another place, I came not to judge the world, but that the world should be saved by me. That is to say, I came not to bring any law, nor to judge men according to the same as Moses and other lawgivers, but I have a higher and better office. The law killed you, and I again do judge, condemn, and kill the law. And so I deliver you from the tyranny thereof. Christ has come to kill the law, which killed us. Oh. Oh, images. And then back to, you get Luther in all of this. We that are old men, which have been so nuzzled up in this pernicious doctrine of the papists, that it hath taken deep root even in our bones and marrow, have conceived an opinion quite contrary to that which Paul here teacheth. For although we confessed with our mouth that Christ redeemed us from the tyranny of the law, yet in very deed in our hearts we thought him to be a lawgiver, a tyrant and a judge, more terrible than Moses himself. And this perverse opinion we cannot yet at this day in so great light of truth utterly reject. So strongly are those things rooted in our hearts which we learn in our youth. But ye which are yet young, and are not infected with this pernicious opinion, may learn Christ purely with less difficulty than we that are old can remove out of our minds these blasphemous imaginations which we have conceived of him. Notwithstanding, ye have not utterly escaped the deceits of the devil. For although ye be not as yet infected with this cursed opinion that Christ is a lawgiver, yet have ye in you the root whereof it springeth. That is, ye have the flesh, reason, and the corruption of nature, which can judge no otherwise of Christ but that he is a lawgiver. Therefore ye must endeavor with all your power to learn so to know and to apprehend Christ as Paul has set him forth in this place. But if besides this natural corruption, there come also corrupt and wicked teachers, of whom this world is full, they will increase this corruption of nature, and so shall the evil be doubled. That is to say, evil instruction will increase and confirm the pernicious error of blind reason, which naturally judgeth Christ to be a lawgiver, and printeth that error mightily in our minds, that without great travail and difficulty it can never be abolished. And Luther goes on to describe the law, how it kills, how it is actually his interpretation of what Paul says when he refers to elemental spirits, the law. And then after going into a long tirade about the law, Luther says, now, of course, there's nothing wrong with the law. Don't misunderstand, folks. The law is okay when it comes to Caesar and to the princes, that there be decency and in order. What Paul wishes to emphasize is that in the matter of our salvation, in the matter of righteousness, in the matter of how we earn admittance into heaven, in the matter of our relationship with God the Father through his Son Christ, the law kills. The law kills, and Christ has killed the law. Now, any images?
You mentioned music. You remember that old TV theme, Victory at Sea?
Oh. Oh, gosh, yeah. Richard Rodgers. Yeah. Yeah, kind of that, a real glory thing, yeah. Trumpets. Okay. Any other sounds or images? The image of Christ and his relationship with the law, and our relationship because of who we are as people of flesh and blood, as people who have devious teachers. Anything.
Well, these images aren't very good, but I see a ladder to heaven, and the ladder is the Ten Commandments, and it's cut, and it falls flat through Christ, and then one walks on the, not a ladder to heaven, but one walks on the law after, I'm taking the rest of Galatians.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
So it's the role of the law. The role will never get you the relationship to God. But once you have the right relationship, you can just walk along in spirit.
Yeah, you don't leave the law, do you?
I'm getting it on the ground, though.
Yeah.
Horizontal, not vertical.
That's neat. That's really neat, and that recalls an image that hadn't occurred, although it sure should have. This winter we read 40. On Luther, and his whole chapters, Gerhard Forty's first chapter starts out about the destruction of ladder theology. Yeah, and it's impossible almost for us to overcome that relationship with the Heavenly Father, the ladder, that even reading Galatians is somehow going to make us better, you know, or you know, at least if not make us better, at least earn us some point. You know, I mean, so that on that great day, we can at least, you know, if we've been rascals, can say we all got together in Koinonia and read Galatians one night. You know, we can't be all bad.
It's like the spiritual, I'm climbing Jacob's
ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder.
For theology.
Yeah, soldiers of the cross. Every round goes higher, higher. Sinner, do you love my Jesus? Higher and higher. Yeah, so the ladder is cut. It's probably been cut and replaced by the cross right through tablets or something, and we stand on those. I like standing on tablets or standing on the law, however that's visualized, the law with us. Anything else? Color. What color is all of this? I mean, if I give you another scroll, you know, and you've got all of the words of Galatians, or let's just say the ones we read, what kind of paint shall I order for you? White?
Brilliant yellow.
Why white first?
Purity of Christ.
Purity of Christ? Okay, why yellow?
It's clear yet forceful.
Sun, source of light.
Sun, okay, yeah.
All light.
Right.
Okay. Any combinations?
How about red?
Well, I like it. it's the most excellent color.
When Jesus Christ comes into our life, we die to self, and His blood covers us.
Okay, red, coming out of yellow.
I like blues and purples from washing and royalty.
Washing. Royalty, wine. We'll have them all in just a minute. That's all right. That's all right. I'm just trying to work with another language here and to see if maybe we can't think in terms of another language. Do we have levels of color? Bands of color. Do the bands run horizontal or do they run vertical or do they run both? Or is it all one big thing? Have we been washed? Has that red come out of the white and yellow? And if in fact it has washed us, is that what we are putting on that makes us look different? I get nervous when people ask me on the street, perfect strangers, whether I have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. You know, I get I want to say something sarcastic. And yet,
you don't.
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't. They're usually big people that. But it's after you've walked away where you say, you know, what I really should have said was, you know, can't you tell? I don't know.
Need you ask.
Does it matter?
Or what does it mean to you?
Or, yeah, who wants to know?
Who are you to ask me?
Yeah.
Rich?
Yes.
Something with the law, I had two images. One was the fact that we're under the law. I thought of people or something being like under a manhole cover in a street, you know, being under something that they couldn't get out of. And then also the law, being under the law and then breaking the law, I think of the law being like a person who enslaves us, you know, just overpowering, you know, we're trapped by this big thing.
Yeah.
And then God coming and beating up this thing, wiping them out.
Yeah.
More of a hero type of thing.
Well, that's kind of close to an altar cross I designed for a church in Bellingham. They decided not to use it. it was a cross which was a cube, you know, a solid Greek metal cross, and Christ was pushing himself out through the top of it, and just the whole cross down the front was cracked, and Christ was just pushing it open and emerging out of the middle of it.
What color was Christ?
The whole thing was bronze. Yeah, it was a metal sculpture, but it didn't go over very well. Yes.
What do you mean to convey by that?
That idea of not only overcoming the law but demolishing it, and that all was taking in the form of cross. Yeah, the demolishing of everything that we are dead to. Of course, one great image of all of this is Satan coming to our house and knocking on our door and saying, and we come to the door and we say to Satan, "I'm sorry, I don't live here anymore. Christ lives here." Yeah.
But that's something you have to do over and over. It's not that cut and dry easy.
That's and of course that's a neat image too. We sometimes flippantly, because it became a village motto for a year, we say new every morning, and we have it hanging over there in the narthex of the village center with daisies and butterflies all over it, you know. But it isn't just kind of a, you know, new every morning. It's like old Adam drowning and dying every morning. That's dying, that's death every morning. And that is a, you know, once again, that baptism thing. And of course, visually, you want to have that in your church too. I mean, a light, nice big baptismal font up in the front with a bowl of water so that people are reminded every day. You know, not just for a little kid's baptism, but for every one of our baptisms every morning. Except most of us, because of our visual heritage, would say it looks too much like a holy water font, you know. And so sometimes one image disrupts another. This is neat for me, just to share some possibilities of thinking in terms of things that are really terribly verbal, to have some other way of forming and locating them in our minds and our hearts. And I guess I would like maybe for next week, if you can prepare, just read through Galatians. It's very short, and we'll just have a discussion in our next Bible class about some of the images that you have come up with that might be helpful to the rest of us in pinning down some of the meanings of the various aspects of law and Christ and Christ's faith, which saves us from the law. Any other final comments before we dance? Al, please.
What the law meant, and it seems to me it means everything that we use to climb that ladder.
Everything we use to climb that ladder. Yeah.
But we have to think of our talent and our performances and
looks.
Our goals, our statuses, our possessions.
What?
They all push and run on this
planet. You are sure running with Luther, Al. Some have thought that Paul speaketh here of those corporal elements, the fire, the air, the water, and the earth. But Paul hath this peculiar manner of speech, and he speaketh here even of the law of God, which he calleth elements or rudiments of this world, and his words seem to be very heretical. So is he wont in other places also to diminish and abase the authority of the law very much, when he calleth it the letter that killeth, the ministry of death and damnation, and the power of sin. And these most odious names, which show plainly the power and use of the law, he chooseth of purpose to admonish us that in the terrors of sin, wrath, and the judgment of God, we trust not to our own righteousness or to the righteousness of the law, seeing that the law in his best and principal use can do nothing else but accuse our consciences, increase sin, threaten death and eternal damnation. Wherefore, this diminishing and abasing of the law must be applied to the conflict of conscience and not to the civil life nor to secure and careless minds. Boy, yeah, the law becomes the ladder. And that can be all kinds of beautiful looking things. So when Christ comes, he takes away the ladder and gives us cross. And we look different because of that.
I'm not sure we look different.
We
may do the same thing, but our hearts are different. The meaning of it is different. I mean, we may perform, we probably would perform better, but it would be for different reasons.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, but the better performance, I think, has a different look.
It's very hard to see.
Yeah. I'm a visual person, Al. I got to go for looks. Let's talk about that some more. I think that's exciting. Thank you much. Dance good.